From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Pop culture, it's all around us. Movies, music, TV, podcasts, books, art. The modern American is swimming in pop culture, if not drowning at times. It can feel overwhelming. And it's because of that that I believe pop culture is worth taking seriously. My next guest today, Aisha Harris, does just that every weekday on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast. Here's a recent episode taking on Disney's new CGI remake of The Little Mermaid.
Aisha, I know you loved this.
What would I give if I could live without these remakes? What would I pay to spend a day without deja vu? Oh, God. Okay, so unlike Mark, I grew up with this movie. I loved the original movie. I can quote it by heart. I could probably reenact the entire film for you right now. I will not do that, but, you know.
I think I'd rather see that than see this again.
You sounded pretty good.
All right.
Yeah, that wasn't too bad.
Let's do it.
Well, so I'm coming from it.
More on the new Little Mermaid in a bit. Harris has a new book out today called Wannabe, Reckonings with the Pop Culture That Shapes Me. It's a series of essays that explore the intersection between her life and the music, movies, and TV that are such an essential part of it. Because of the way book publishing and NPR corporate communications works, I actually spoke with Harris back in May. We first broadcast this interview in June. That said, we love hearing what you thought about our conversation, so keep in touch by emailing talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is Aisha Harris on her book, Wannabe, Reckonings with the Pop Culture That Shapes Me. Aisha Harris, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for making the time to be with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you begin the book by talking about, what's the line? Inadvertent self-formation by way of popular culture. and it kind of reminds me of this line in High Fidelity, that what really matters is what you like, not what you are like.
Books, records, films, these things matter.
Say more about that.
Yeah, I mean, High Fidelity actually makes a cameo in my book. But what I hope to sort of convey throughout this sort of exercise of 9 essays is to examine how pop culture has shaped all of us, whether it's subconsciously or very consciously. I think if you have found yourself steeped in any sort of culture, whether it's arts, theater, movies, TV, books, you are going to be affected by it in some way because it reflects and in some way reinforces whatever time period or whatever time it was created in. And so I really wanted to sort of take a step back and look at how it has affected the way I see myself as a millennial Black woman, and also how it has sort of affected the way we are today, especially when it comes to social media and how we use pop culture, or many people use pop culture as sort of an identity marker, and how, you know, the pitfalls of that, but also the joys in that at times as well.
So I think back on my own youth and the pop culture that formed me. It's like, I would probably say Star Trek, you know, maybe a couple other things. Mm. You get into such great detail, you know, was it the Babysitter's Club book series? Did you have journals growing up? How do you remember all this stuff?
Oh, I definitely had some journals. I actually wrote like Babysitter's Club fanfic. I didn't realize it was fanfic at the time. I don't even know if that was a word then, but I was a very avid writer, and most of my writing when I was younger was like filtered through my own versions of Babysitter's Club stories. I tend to revisit a lot of things from my youth. You know, Disney movies, I rewatch Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, the originals, not the remakes. I still watch those very frequently, and they're just kind of ingrained in my brain. And so, you know, I think that there's not everyone is as pop culture steeped as I am, but I do think a lot of people are. And I think regardless of whether you are or not, you'll find something that will, you know, hopefully speak to you in some way in this book.
So we're an Illinois-based show. You went to undergrad at Northwestern. You mentioned Illinois ties on your dad's side of the family. In what way do those influences, if they do, show up in your work and life today?
I mean, going to school in Illinois, it's like a bubble, you know. So I would never claim that like I actually lived in Chicago, but having family from there, and having family who is also from the South, I definitely, you know, have that sort of ingrained in me from my childhood, especially my father, who is kind of old school in many ways. And, you know, when I was growing up, it was always like, call every adult Mr. or Ms., even if they say, you know, call me by my first name. He's like, nope, you're going to call them by Mr. or Ms. And I think that sort of shows up in my work, because my dad does pop up a few times, especially in the first essay, which is about my name and how I've had a interesting relationship with it. And the fact that it kind of came, I was born in the 80s, and it kind of came out of this era where a lot of Black Americans were naming their kids, giving their kids African names. And it, you know, growing up as a Connecticut, in a suburban, mostly white environment, it made it a little challenging at times. And so I kind of wanted to dig into that and explore my relationship with my name, which also ties in a way back to the high fidelity stuff and, you know, wanting to using pop culture to sort of shape how I think of myself.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of the book is about your identity and how you reckon with that in your work and in your life. You do pose a question to yourself in the book, and I wanted to put it to you now, which is, where do your identities as a Black person and a Black critic align and diverge?
It's always that line is always shifting. It's interesting because I recently reviewed the new Little Mermaid film.
I want to be where the people are. I want to see,
I wrote about how the fact that the Ariel is a Black princess, is Black now, I get that it means a lot to little Black girls everywhere. I would have loved to have that when I was a kid because I was obsessed with Ariel, and I think it did in some ways contribute to my not necessarily liking myself as a kid because I wanted to be like her and look like her.
Up where they walk, up where they run, up where they stay all day in the sun, wandering free, wish I could be part of that world.
But at the same time, I think that the movie itself is not very good. And having a Black princess alone does not, to me, merit the creation of this like blatant cash grab by this giant industry titan. And so I've had readers and listeners respond in not great ways and claiming that I'm not Black or that I'm anti-Black somehow. And so I have to sort of kind of push back against that, because I think that there's a way to both critique Black art in a thoughtful way and not be seen as anti-Black. But people are going to take offense. And that this is a common theme that I had throughout the book as well, is that like, people take it personally. And if you don't like something that they like, or if you like something that they don't like. And I think that's kind of where it stems from. And I have to just let myself, as a Black critic, I have to set those concerns aside and just focus on how the art moved me.
Yeah. And that is one of the big themes throughout the book is, you know, do you grade on a curve for representation?
Yeah. And I would say no. I specifically, Black art is not fragile and should not be treated as such. I think to automatically champion something merely for representation's sake is to not take it seriously. And I believe that it should be taken as seriously as any work by Wes Anderson, Spielberg, like anything like that.
Sometimes in these conversations, I like to borrow a little game from the podcast Conversations with Tyler. It's called Underrated or Overrated. I'll just put a name or a title out there, and you tell me if you think it's underrated or overrated and why, if you're game for that.
Sure.
Lizzo.
I think she's appropriately rated. She's got Grammys. I think that, yes, there are still people. She receives a lot of hate, but I think she receives a lot of love too. And I think in a like 10, 15 years ago, she probably wouldn't have been. But I think we're in a different moment now. So I think appropriately rated. She's great. I love her.
Shonda Rhimes, who incidentally is probably the most successful alum from my high school.
she's, I think she's I think she's appropriately rated as well. I think she's done some things, artistically speaking, that I don't necessarily agree with. But I also think she has managed to create this empire that has never, like, never existed before her. So I think the fact that she has been able to create this empire first on ABC and now with Netflix, she's doing exactly what needs to be done.
Okay, The Lion King. CGI version.
I mean, it made like $1 billion at the box office, but I think most, at least critics, hated it appropriately. So, sorry, I realize I'm not like doing the I think at least by like critical standards, I think it was appropriately rated. By
voting
box
with your dollars, yeah,
way overrated. People right. should have stayed home.
All right, Dave Chappelle from the Before Times.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
Appropriately.
Yeah.
Like I think Chappelle's show, still for the most part holds up. There are some sketches that I don't think necessarily hold up anymore, but I think he's received so many accolades. And I think a lot of the people who are still fans of him are hanging on to the previous Dave Chappelle or whatever he was years ago. Yeah. So I feel like he's appropriately rated.
Okay. The Wire TV series.
Oh, underrated. I think I mean, look,
I guess what I'm getting, what I'm curious, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. I know our time is short, but I wonder about, and you write a little bit somewhat sarcastically at times about, black art that white people like too much and you should be suspicious of that. And I wonder, you know, how those things fit into that, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I'm not. I think that more people need to see it. I think there's still a lot of people who haven't seen it. So I think it's crazy to say, but I think it's underrated. And I also think like season two, I've come around on, having watched it like 3 or 4 times now. I'm like, oh, season two was actually, it was better than I remember. I still would not rate it near 4, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, no, season 5's the real weak point in my view, and it pains me as a journalist, obviously, to say that.
I like season 5, yeah? But
all right, agree to disagree, I guess.
Yeah,
this is probably the last question we'll have time for. Can we talk just briefly about nostalgia? And we can insert the Mad Men carousel clip here, right? It's delicate but potent.
Teddy told me that in Greek, nostalgia literally means the pain from an old wound. It's a twinge in your heart, far more powerful than memory alone.
In the culture, is nostalgia a force for good or evil?
Mostly evil. And I say this because, again, Disney is just, they recently announced, less than 10 years after Moana was released, they're already planning a live action CGI remake. So I think especially in Hollywood, it is wielded for evil. I think also politically, it's often wielded for evil when you think about all the conservatives who like to quote Martin Luther King and take him completely out of context. So yeah, I think nostalgia, it can be a good thing, but I think more often than not, it's wielded for nefarious purposes.
Mm-hmm. Last question. What do you hope people take away from reading your essays, memoir essays?
I just want people to have fun with it and also come away with it feeling a little bit challenged to look within themselves, to be kinder to themselves about how they interact with art, and also be kinder to other people, and allow everyone to sort of like what they like without taking things too personally. And also, hopefully just learn a few things, because I go down some big, deep rabbit holes.
Absolutely. I don't know if you would take this as a compliment or not, but it reminded me a lot of some of Chuck Klosterman's writing, which is just like so laden with pop culture references and everything. It's really,
that's
the
compliment.
Breath is. Yeah, good, good. I'm glad it came across that way.
Thank you.
Aisha Harris, thank you so much for making the time to be with us. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Aisha Harris is co-host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast and the author of Wannabe, Reckonings with the Pop Culture That Shapes Me. We first broadcast this conversation in June of last year. Coming up, my talk with National Book Award-winning poet Nikki Finney. Her work reckons with what it means to be a woman and Black in America and in the South in the past and today. That conversation is coming up after a break, and I do want to share a programming note. All next week, we are going to be focusing on fentanyl, the fentanyl crisis in America. We're going to do an overview. Where did this drug come from? Why is it everywhere now? Why is it being put in so many drugs that people might not suspect it to be in, even cigarettes sometimes? Why is it so addictive? And why are people dying from it in such great numbers? We'll proceed with conversations and guests who can talk about addiction, what that's like, how people have worked to overcome it. We're going to focus on the politics of fentanyl and the sometimes different approaches people take of ramping up law enforcement responses versus trying to do harm reduction. And finally, we're going to explore solutions for the fentanyl problem in our society, especially through the lens of what other areas of our country and even around the world are trying to do. That's all coming up next week. We would love to include your comments, experiences, and questions in our program. So please send an email or leave a voicemail. You can find all the ways to contact us at our website, 21stshow.org, the email address, talk@21stshow.org, and our voicemail line, 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. Then be sure to tune in next week for our special coverage on fentanyl. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.